Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivanir Hari. Jana Vallabha Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivanir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vrijadana Ranjana Nandana Vrijadana Yashoda Nandana Vrijadana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivanir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Nandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parvatakacharya Astro Tarasatacha Shunani's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parvatakacharya Astro Tarasatacha Shunani's Divine Grace Shri Bhakti Sanata Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anati Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Amacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Premshikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gorbhati Vrinda Jai. All glories to the assembly devotees. All glories to the assembly devotees. All glories to the assembly devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, today is a very, very auspicious day because today is the anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, my grandfather's spiritual master, and some of your great-grandfather's spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj appeared in this material world on February 6th, 1874, which is 137 years ago today. Very, very most auspicious day. Srila Prabhupada describes his spiritual master as being Gaura Shakti. Gaura Shakti means the energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we know, was directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared for our benefit here in the Kali Yuga. The Kali Yuga is described as the most inauspicious of times, that God consciousness, spiritual life practically comes to a screeching halt, to practically zero. But there is a period of time within the Kali Yuga that lasts for 10,000 years. This 10,000 years period is described as being the golden age of the Kali Yuga. And within this golden age, God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, is brought to a whole new different level, where everybody in the entire universe, not just here on this planet, but the whole universe, as Lord Chaitanya predicted, as many towns and villages as there are, his name would be chanted in all of them. So in order to fulfill this prophecy, Lord Chaitanya, he first appeared, and after his appearance, he sent many other great personalities to assist him in this mission. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he was one of those personalities, one of those most important personalities in the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the one who actually brought Krishna consciousness and organized it in the modern day on a grand scale. Srila Prabhupada describes his first meeting with his spiritual master. It took place in 1922. There's a tape. Prabhupada went on one of his worldwide missions. And I was down in the Miami Temple at the time. This was 1975. And Srila Prabhupada was passing through there from, he'd come up from South America. And after the Miami stop, he went up to Atlanta. In Atlanta, there's a very famous tape. I have it upstairs. Very nice tape. Where Srila Prabhupada is describing the appearance day of his Guru Maharaj. It was the anniversary, like today. And he was talking about how his first meeting with him was when he was 26 years old, 1922. Prabhupada describes that he had one son at the time. And on the first meeting with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur asked Srila Prabhupada to immediately take up this preaching of Krishna consciousness right away. And Srila Prabhupada in the lecture, I was just listening to it, he said, but I was thinking, I was a householder, I was thinking, I have my family, I'm a manager of a big chemical concern, how can I do like that? And I don't think I've ever really heard Prabhupada ever say this before. I've listened to a lot of Prabhupada lectures and a lot of conversations and so forth and morning walks. Very rarely do I hear Prabhupada say, I made a mistake. Very rarely. Because everything Prabhupada was doing, he was doing for Krishna. And even though, you know, Prabhupada was the most exalted of all devotees, and the most, he was at the same time very humble, but for the sake of, you know, the association of his disciples, he didn't say, I made a mistake. But he did say it at this particular day. He said, I made a mistake. He said, I should have immediately joined the mission. I should have immediately begun to help my Guru Maharaj preach. Prabhupada said, I made a mistake by doing that. So that's very telling. That Srila Prabhupada, even though he had so many family material responsibilities, managing the chemical company, family life, so forth. Prabhupada himself, his own words, says he made a mistake, that he should have taken up Krishna consciousness right then. Not Krishna consciousness, but helping to spread his spiritual master's movement. And I think that's very instructive to understand what the urgency is of to take part in this mission. You know, whatever it is that one may be doing, whether one is working on the outside or in the temple, doesn't make any difference, but one should immediately take up this mission with full faith and full enthusiasm to help facilitate Lord Chaitanya's prediction that everywhere this movement should be spread. So this is I wanted to read this because I'm not a very eloquent speaker. I don't know very much, but my godbrother, Giri Maharaj, he wrote he gave a talk. This was back on December 24th, 2010. On the appearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. So I would like to read this because it's very, very instructive. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, is my grand spiritual master. But I feel that I never really knew him so well until I read his biography, Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava, by my godbrother Bhakti Vikas Swami. Many of the quotes and references below come from that work, which has helped bring me closer to my spiritual grandfather. We are all here by the mercy of His divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's a line through which the mercy descends upon us, beginning with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and passing one teacher after the other through parampara or the civil succession. 5,000 years ago, Krishna came in His original form and instructed in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, always think of me and become my devotee. 500 years ago, the same Lord Krishna came again in the devotional form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya to explain and personally show how to be a devotee and always think of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya quoted a verse from the Brihadnaradiya Purana. Hari nama, hari nama, hari nama eva kevalam. Kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. Gatir anyataha. One should chant the holy name, chant the holy name, chant the holy name of Hari, Krishna. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way for success in the present age of Kali. He also desired and predicted, in as many towns and villages as there are on the surface of the earth, my holy name will be propagated. This desire and prediction were expressed at a time when it was almost impossible to imagine or believe that it could even happen. In the 1800s, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur began the effort to spread the holy name of Krishna to countries outside of India. He wrote a small book in English called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts, and dispatched copies to libraries around the world. In recent years, Srila Prabhupada's disciples have discovered copies in libraries from Canada, McGill University, all the way to Australia. Bhaktivinoda Thakur yearned for the day when devotees from all over the world would unite in Harinam Sankirtan, and he wrote, quote, very soon the unparalleled path of Harinam Sankirtan will be propagated all over the planet. Oh, for that day when the fortunate English, French, Russian, German, and American people will take up banners, mridangas, and kartals and perform kirtan through their streets and towns. When will that day come? Oh, for that day when the fair-skinned men from their side will raise up the chanting of Jai Sachi Nandana Ki Jai, and join with the Bengali devotees. When will that day be? That's a quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book, Sajjana Toshini. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very powerful spiritual master, Acharya. After the disappearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, many unscrupulous people claiming to be Mahaprabhu's followers introduced concocted philosophies and practices, even illicit activities, to the point that if an educated Bengali heard the word Vaishnava, he would immediately think the worst. In educated circles, Vaishnava had come to mean a sentimental, ignorant person with loose character who in the guise of religion engaged in all sorts of activities. In this precarious situation, Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur came forward and presented the true understanding of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, speaking strongly against the deviant groups that had distorted and perverted his pure teachings and practices. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur held a high position in the British rule of India, the highest an Indian could hold, and that only very rarely. He had important responsibilities in the government and had a large family, but his main interest was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Sankirtan movement. He would sleep little and rise early. He did so much, wrote books, traveled, preached, established centers, and had a tremendous effect, especially on the people of Bengal and Orissa, including the intellectual elite who were just then coming in touch with modern ideas from the West. He revived the true mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, inspiring hosts of people to join him, and pushed back the deviant groups which had lost much of their influence. Having undertaken such a tremendous task and executed it so successfully, but still being surrounded by so many parties with vested interests in covering the true intention of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was at a loss as to who would carry on his mission. So he prayed to Sri Krishna to send someone one of his own associates from the spiritual realm to continue the work. It is understood that the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the answer to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur's prayers. There are many incidents from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's early life that indicate that he was that person sent by Krishna. When he was 5 months old, the Ratha Yatra cart halted in front of Bhakti Vinod Thakur's home in Puri, and the Thakur directed his wife, Bhagavat Devi, to carry the baby to the chariot. When the infant was placed at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath, he extended his tiny arms to touch the deity's feet, and Lord Jagannath dropped one of his garlands around the baby, a blessing and a confirmation of his divine descent. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati understood his father's mission and worked with him to fulfill it. His father initiated him into the chanting of the holy name, Hari Nam, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But, according to etiquette, a father does not give actual diksha to his son. So Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur instructed him to approach Srila Gorkhasura Das Babaji, a great Mahabhagavat, fully realized, liberated soul for diksha. But Srila Gorkhasura Das Babaji was a renounced bhajananandi and not inclined to accept disciples. He preferred simply to immerse himself in chanting the holy names and hearing scripture. When Sri Siddhanta Saraswati approached him, Srila Gorkhasura Das Babaji Maharaj told him directly that he would not accept him or anyone else as a disciple. Still, Siddhanta Saraswati persisted. So Babaji Maharaj told him, "I will ask Mahaprabhu." A few days later, when Siddhanta Saraswati returned and inquired what was Mahaprabhu's order, Babaji Maharaj replied, "I forgot to ask." And when he came for the third time, Babaji Maharaj directly refused him. "Mahaprabhu has not given me permission." Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was devastated. He stood up and quoted a line by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, addressed to the Guru Karuna Nanholi, "Kundaya Kunidya Pranana Rakibo Ara." "If you are not merciful to me, I will simply weep, and I will not be able to maintain my life." When Gorkhasura Das Babaji Maharaj understood how sincere and serious Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was, he accepted him as his disciple and initiated him. 5 years later, in 1905, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati undertook a vow to chant at least 3 lakhs holy name, 3 lakhs holy names daily, or 10 million monthly, until he had chanted 1 billion holy names. For his disciples, Srila Prabhupada fixed the minimum number of 16 rounds per day, which takes most devotees about 2 hours. 4 times 16 is 64 rounds, or 1 lakh names. And 3 times 64 rounds comes to 300,000 names, which would take us, even at a good rate, at least 16 hours a day. In Mayapur, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati constructed a grass hut where he lived very simply and chanted day and night. If rain came and leaked through the thatched roof, he would just hold up an umbrella and continue chanting, "Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." To complete his vow took more than 9 years. But even then, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati would write, preach, and serve the Dham. One program he attended was especially significant. In Bengal, the caste Brahmins held a stranglehold on religious people's practices. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur had spoken openly against them and their false claim, based on their supposed high birth, that they possessed exclusive rights to be gurus and perform brahminical functions. Naturally, when Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Sri Siddhanta Saraswati challenged them, the Brahmins reacted. An assembly of Smarta Brahmins and Jata Goswamis, caste Goswamis, came together to try to refute the arguments of the pure Vaishnavas and published a tract against them. In response, the Vaishnavas called a 3-day public meeting to discuss the relative positions of Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur was expected to be the main speaker, but severe rheumatism had rendered him bedridden. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur himself was not born in a Brahmin family, and obviously neither was his son. Now, the question may be raised, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was a ray of Vishnu, an eternal associate of Krishna's, sent from the spiritual realm to the material world to preach. Krishna could have arranged for him to take birth in the highest class of Brahmin family with all the brahminical qualifications, but he didn't. Why not? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explains that the Lord does not arrange for pure devotees to take birth only in high-class families, with all the advantages of good health, education, culture, wealth, strength, and so on, because ordinary people would feel discouraged. Very interesting. They would think, oh, I didn't take birth in a high-class family. I don't have this or that advantage. What is the hope for me? So, great souls take birth in various kinds of families to show us the example that anyone in any condition, even if not born in a Brahmin family, can become Krishna conscious, and to give us hope that we too can become Krishna conscious. So, after the publication of the caste Brahmins tract on the eve of the public meeting to be convened by the Vaishnavas, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was incapacitated, and he cried out in desperation, "Is there no one in the Vaishnav world who can reply to these people and by presenting scriptural evidence and logic put a stop to their base activities?" Sri Siddhanta Saraswati took up the challenge, wrote an essay called Conclusions regarding the comparison of Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and went to attend the meeting. Many caste Brahmins, although not invited, also went to the meeting. Understanding that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was indisposed and unable to attend, they swaggered about, confident that they would easily triumph over the Vaishnavas. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was the first speaker. He began by quoting various statements from scripture about the exalted position of Brahmins, and the caste Brahmins in the audience were delighted. He was so brilliant that he could speak better about the high position of Brahmins than the Brahmins themselves. But then he began quoting verses from scripture about the position of Vaishnavas, establishing that Vaishnavas were higher than even Brahmins, and that irrespective of one's birth, if one accepted the Vaishnava principle, he would attain a position more exalted than that of a Brahmin. The Brahmins in the audience were completely overwhelmed. Seeing no way to counter Srila Siddhanta Saraswati's arguments, the Smartha Brahmins and Jata Goshanis slinked away. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur felt assured that his mission was in capable hands, that Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was a worthy successor to his cause, and Sri Siddhanta Saraswati began to preach far and wide. He was fearless and open in his criticism of anything false. His example and instructions are relevant to us today. Srila Saraswati Thakur was a prodigious writer and speaker on various topics, including how to present the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is very instructive, because now we're going to get an opportunity to hear how it is that we today should present Krishna consciousness, coming directly from the words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. We don't have to speculate, what's the best way to preach? What's the best way to spread Krishna consciousness? Should I try this? Should I try that? Should we do like this or do like that? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is very clear. Giriraj Maharaj is very nicely describing it. He noted that there are people who think that you should say only positive, not negative things. I explained that when I was in Madras, I was just preaching as I heard Srila Prabhupada preach, and people reacted. Even friends, people who were hosting me and supporting me, advised me, don't criticize others, just say positively what you want about your philosophy and activities, but don't criticize others. Srila Saraswati Thakur addressed this very issue and averred that it is imperative not only to elucidate the truth, but also to criticize anything false. Because in Kali Yuga, there is so much false propaganda that we have to be very clear. There cannot be any ambiguity in our message. The positive method by itself is not the most effective method of propaganda in a controversial age like the present. The negative method, which seeks to differentiate the truth from non-truth in all forms, is even better calculated to convey the directly inconceivable significance of the absolute. It is a necessity which cannot be conscientiously avoided by the dedicated preacher of the truth if he wants to be a loyal servant of Godhead. The method is sure to create an atmosphere of controversy in which it is quite easy to lose one's balance of judgment. But the ways of the deluding energy are so intricate that unless their mischievous nature is fully exposed, it is not possible for the soul in the conditioned state to avoid the snares spread by the enchanters for encompassing the ruin of her only too willing victims. It is a duty which shall be sacred to all who have been enabled to attain even a distant glimpse of the absolute. Srila Prabhupada also demonstrated this approach. He had a friend named Dr. Patel who would always accompany him on his morning walks in Juhu Beach and converse with him. Dr. Patel was quite literate. He knew Sanskrit, and he was quite sharp. One morning, Dr. Patel started praising a revered popular religious figure of India, and Srila Prabhupada, in turn, began to criticize the figure. Dr. Patel protested, "You cannot criticize like this." But Srila Prabhupada replied, "I am not saying. Krishna is saying. Nadmam duskritina mudha prapadyante naradama mayaya prita jnana asuram bhava ashritaha." If you are not surrendered to Krishna, you are a miscreant in one of these categories. Fool, rascal, demon. Nice, huh? Dr. Patel became very agitated and raised his voice, and Srila Prabhupada raised his. The whole situation became very tense and intense. Finally, Dr. Patel's friends dragged him away. It was like in a boxing ring when the bell rings to signal the end of the fight, and the two opponents just keep going at each other and the referee has to tear them apart. For the first time, Dr. Patel stopped coming for the morning walks, and Srila Prabhupada also said, quote, "Now, no more discussion. We will only read Krishna book." Has anyone ever listened to the talks between Dr. Patel and Srila Prabhupada? You should listen to them because he's a constant adversary of Srila Prabhupada's establishing pure Krishna consciousness as the only way. He's constantly giving arguments. I mean, this went on for, I mean, there's like 10 or 15 tapes where this Dr. Patel is going on morning walks with Srila Prabhupada and arguing with him. And this was the final straw right here. This is when Srila Prabhupada took him directly head on and he stopped coming around. But there's a happy ending here. But after a couple of days, as Dr. Patel explained, with no intentions of joining Srila Prabhupada, he was walking from one direction on the beach and Prabhupada from the other. Something in his heart just drew him to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. He offered obeisances and said, "Prabhupada, I am sorry, but we are trained to respect all the accredited saints of India." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes. And our business is to point out one who is not a saint." That he learned from his Guru Maharaj, Sri Srimad Bhakti Sanata Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. We not only tell who is a saint, we also explain who is not a saint. And that is the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So people will know clearly what is what. Otherwise, they could be misled and suffer. Srila Saraswati Thakur was a tremendously powerful and successful preacher who fearlessly spoke the truth. And his pure preaching inspired hundreds of thousands of people to support him, follow him, join him, and become his disciples. Yet he also had enemies. He himself was the enemy of falsehood, and people who were thriving on falsehood sometimes became his enemy. There were many incidents. One, when he and his party were performing Navadvipa Parikrama, the caste Brahmins hired gundas, or thugs, who let loose with a volley of stones and boulders on the party. They were really aiming to take Srila Saraswati Thakur's life. There were attempts on his life on other occasions as well. But one of his disciples cleverly exchanged his white dress for Saraswati Thakur's saffron. So Saraswati Thakur emerged, disguised, and escaped. But it was a terrible scene. It looked like a massacre, with the streets of Navadvip stained with blood of the Vaishnavas. Some devotees suffered great gashes and fractures, but by Krishna's grace, none of them were killed. It was a dark, dark moment, but when it came to light that the attack had been perpetrated by the caste Goswamis, the shocked public sided with Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati and the Gaudiya Math, and the caste Goswami's opposition to him lost whatever apparent credibility that it had. As news of the events spread, those in learned circles protested in newspapers and magazines. The chief police inspector in Navadvip was sacked, and the parikrama continued under full police protection. Later, when urged to press charges against the culprits, Srila Saraswati Thakur declined, saying that the hooligans had done a yeoman's service. Otherwise, how could the Gaudiya Math have been featured on the front pages of all of the newspapers? Srila Saraswati Thakur was the enemy of falsehood, but he was the well-wisher of everyone, even of people who were inimical to him. Although Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati was so austere and rigid, so strict with himself, when it came to preaching, he was ready to spend any amount of money and do anything. When I was first serving in India in 1970, only affluent people could afford cars, mainly the local manufactured Fiats and ambassadors. But Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati Thakur had a limousine back in the 1930s, and he dressed very nicely. So in 1970, hardly anyone except the most wealthy people in India were driving automobiles. But 40 years before that, Srila Bhakti Sanatha had a big, giant limousine to facilitate all of his more affluent and wealthy people that were coming to see him. Very nice. Very instructive. And he dressed very nicely. He would always wear a dhoti, but on occasion, as required, he would also don a double-breasted coat, stockings, and shoes. For receiving special guests, he had fine furniture. Thus, referring to the elite, he said, quote, Bhakti Sanatha's quote, "We are preaching by approaching the people of the world, dressed even somewhat better than they are, showing knowledge even somewhat greater than theirs, being even somewhere more stylish than they, without which they would think us worthless and not listen to our Hari Katha. I have to go to various places for propagating Hari Katha, so I must present myself as a learned and decent gentleman. Otherwise, non-devotees will not give me their time." He used all means to broadcast the message of Krishna. He had dioramas and other exhibits made using the latest technologies and staged huge theistic exhibitions. He built a grand marble temple on the banks of the Ganges at Bug Bazaar in Calcutta. The procession that brought the deities on a beautiful Rath chariot from the Math at Uttadangi to the new temple was enormous. Literally millions of people lined the streets along the 2-mile route, which took 4 hours to traverse. And 25,000 men, divided into 43 groups, accompanied the deities with loud Harinam Sankirtan. Wow. For its work, the Gaudiya Math owned 4 cars, a horse and buggy, an elephant, and a camel. Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati would treat prominent guests to excursions on the Ganges in one of the Math's launches, boats, and expound the Hari Katha to them. In January of 1935, the governor of Bengal, Sir John Anderson, visited Mayapur. This was a major event because the Britishers were the rulers, and Srila Saraswati Thakur was one of their subjects, their vassals. Still, the governor, accompanied by many other dignitaries, came all the way to Mayapur to meet Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati and see his work. In spite of his tremendous purity and potency and success as a preacher within Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati's own institution, there were disconcerting signs that some of his leading disciples were becoming materially infected. With so much opulence, facility, fame, and respect, some of them had become distracted. Instead of realizing that all facility was meant for the service of the Lord, to bring people to the Lord's unalloyed service, they were enjoying the facilities and the adulation.
In an effort to reform them, Srila Saraswati Thakur spoke very strongly, and he restricted the use of certain facilities only for service, only for preaching, to curb the devotees' materialistic tendencies. Of course, he also had many sincere disciples, and they could, who did not become material affected. At the same time, Srila Saraswati Thakur continued his propagation activities in full force, with all enthusiasm, writing, publishing, traveling, and preaching, and was successful wherever he went. Still, he was disturbed within himself that some of his disciples had become so mundane. Ultimately, when Srila Saraswati Thakur reached the age of 62, his health declined. He also made statements indicating that he would soon be leaving. In late October 1936, he traveled to Puri, a holy place that was also warmer than Calcutta. But for some reason in December, in a very weakened condition, he wanted to return to Calcutta, and the disciples arranged for his travel by train. One poignant incident took place when he was about to leave. A householder told his young son, "This may be the last time you see him." And the boy offered full flat obeisances to Srila Saraswati Thakur, who noted the child's devotion. In Calcutta, his disciples called in some of the most renowned physicians in the city. When one advised Srila Saraswati Thakur, "You have to rest more. You can't speak so much." Saraswati Thakur proceeded to preach to him for hours about the purpose of human life, that the physical body is temporary, and that the soul's absolute necessity is to serve the Lord. He felt that if he couldn't speak about Krishna, what was the use of living? We're here on this planet only for the sake of serving and broadcasting the glories of Sri Krishna. On December 23rd, he instructed the devotees gathered at his bedside. Quote, this is Maharaj, this is Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj speaking. "I have upset many persons' minds. Many might have considered me their enemy because I was obliged to speak the plain truth of service and devotion towards the absolute Godhead. I have given them all those troubles only so that they might turn their face towards the personality of Godhead without any desire for gain and with unalloyed devotion. Surely someday they will be able to understand that. I advise all to preach the teachings of Rupa Raghunath with all energy and resources. Our ultimate goal shall be to become the dust of the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath Goswamis. You should all work conjointly under the guidance of your spiritual master with a view to serve the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. You should live somehow or other without any quarrel in this mortal world, only for the service of Godhead. Do not, please, give up the service of Godhead in spite of all dangers, all criticisms, and all discomforts. Don't be disappointed, for most people in the world do not serve the personality of Godhead. Do not give up your own service, which is your everything and your all. Neither reject the process of chanting and hearing of the transcendental holy name of Godhead. You should always chant the transcendental name of Godhead with patience and forbearance, like a tree, and humbleness like a straw. There are many amongst you who are well qualified and able workers. We have no other desire whatsoever." After midnight on December 21st, Srila Saraswati Thakur left this world. His disciples took his body to Mayapur and established his samadhi there. He was a monumental personality. News of his departure was broadcast on all India radio, and an official day of mourning was observed in Bengal. The corporation of Calcutta had a special meeting in tribute to his memory and issued a resolution expressing its members' deep sorrow. The mayor addressed the assembly. This is the mayors of Calcutta speaking. I rise to condole the passing away of His Divine Grace Paramahamsa Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, the present Acharya of the Gaudiya Math of Calcutta and the great leader of the Gaudiya movement throughout the world. This melancholy event happened on the first day of this new year. Born in 1874, he dedicated his whole life to religious pursuits and dissemination of the cultural wealth of this great and ancient land of ours. An intellectual giant, he elicited the admiration of all for his unique scholarship, high and varied attainments, original thinking, and wonderful exposition of many difficult branches of knowledge. With invaluable contributions, he enriched many journals. He was the author of some devotional literature of repute. He was one of the most powerful and brightest exponents of the cult of Vaishnavism. His utterances and writings displaying a deep study of comparative philosophy and theology. Catholicity of his views, soundness of his teachings, and above all, his dynamic personality and the irresistible force of his pure and simple life had attracted thousands of followers of his message of love of God, service to the Absolute, as propagated by Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He was the founder and guiding spirit of the Sri Chaitanya Math at Sri Mayapur Nadia and the Gaudiya Math of Calcutta. The Gaudiya movement, to which his contribution is no small one, has received a setback at the passing away of such a great soul. His departure has created a void in the spiritual horizon of India, which is difficult to be filled up. That void was a big one. There was no one else like him. Practically, there had never been anyone like him before, and no one could imagine anyone like him coming afterwards. But then in 1965, Srila Bhakti Sanatha's humble servant, a Grihastha disciple named Abhi Charavinda Das, who after his Guru Maharaj's disappearance had been awarded sannyas and the name A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami by Sripad Bhakti Pranjana Keshava Goswami Maharaj, boarded a steamer from Calcutta, traveled to New York, and began the Krishna Consciousness Movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in the West. Bhaktivedanta Swami, or Srila Prabhupada, as he became known, embodied the spirit and the teachings and the potency of his Guru Maharaj and fulfilled that desire and prediction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Saraswati Thakur, that the holy names of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, be propagated in every town and village of the world. Srila Prabhupada made adjustments because he had his own audience and particular circumstances. Like his Guru Maharaj, he was ready to use anything and everything in the service of the mission. He engaged modern technology, tape recorders, dictaphones, electric typewriters, printing presses, computers, airplanes in the service of the Lord. He sent disciples to Bengal to learn the traditional art of doll making and also used modern technology to create diorama exhibits illustrating the principles of Krishna consciousness and the pastimes of the Lord. Adopting Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati's idea of theistic exhibitions, he created the FATE, First American Theistic Exhibition is what it stands for, museum in London, in Los Angeles. So the line of Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati Thakur is continuing by his divine grace. But it is not easy to preach in Kali Yuga. Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati had many enemies, and Srila Prabhupada did too. As Srila Prabhupada said, quote, big preaching means big enemies. We're not going to make many enemies, but neither are we going to have much effect. In fact, Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati sarcastically remarked, mein bekup, tum bekup. I'll be quiet, you'll be quiet. And Srila Bhakti Sanatha sarcastically saying this, which means I'll be quiet and you be quiet. Meaning I won't disturb you, you don't disturb me. But that was not his mood, and that was certainly not Srila Prabhupada's mood. And that should not be our mood either. And of course, the holy name, the essence of everything, is the chanting of the holy name. Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati advised, Krishna and Krishna Nam are not two entities. Krishna is his holy name, and the holy name is Krishna. Krishna Nam is the son of Nanda, Shyamasundar. Our only devotional service and duty is Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtan. This understanding is auspicious, end quote. And to one disciple, he wrote, quote, I am overjoyed to hear that your enthusiasm for chanting is increasing, and our contaminations are removed by chanting. The Lord's form, qualities, and pastimes will be revealed to us in the holy name. There is no point in making a separate effort to artificially remember the Lord's form, qualities, and pastimes. The Lord and His name are one and the same. This will be understood very clearly when the coverings in your heart are removed. By chanting without offenses, you will personally realize that all perfections come from the Holy Name. Through chanting, the distinction that exists between the self and the gross and subtle bodies is gradually effaced, and one realizes one's own spiritual form. Once aware of the spiritual body, as one continues to chant, one sees the transcendental nature of the Lord's form. Only the Holy Name reveals the spiritual form of the living being, and then causes him to be attracted to Krishna's form. Only the Holy Name reveals the spiritual qualities of the living being, and then causes him to be attracted to Krishna's qualities. Only the Holy Name reveals the spiritual activities of the living being, and then causes him to be attracted to Krishna's pastimes. By service to the Holy Name, we do not mean only the chanting of the Holy Name. It also includes the other duties of the chanter. If we serve the Holy Name with the body, mind, and soul, then the direction of that service spontaneously manifests like the sun in the clear sky of the chanter's heart. What is the nature of the Holy Name? Eventually, all these understandings spontaneously appear in the heart of one who chants the Holy Name. The true nature of Hari Nam is revealed by listening to, reading, and studying the scriptures. It is unnecessary to write anything further on this subject. All these things will be revealed to you through chanting. Thank you very much. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, wasn't that wonderful? That was ecstatic. It was a lecture by my godbrother, Giriraj Maharaj. Oh, Sajjana Toshini? Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav. This is how many years did it take him to do this? 10 years? I think it took Maharaj 10 years to write this book. Much research is there. If anyone wants to get even a more broad and a deeper understanding, this book is full of it. I mean, from beginning to end. This is only one of three chapters.